The Metis Tech Show.
Welcome to the Metis Tech Show, a show for HVAC professionals by HVAC professionals.
The Metis Tech Show.
So have you been to the Café du Monde?
I have never been there.
Never been there?
Nope.
No, you have to go there.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. So we've had the beignets here at the hotel.
The what?
The beignets.
Beignets.
How can you spell that?
Beignets.
Oh, God, you don't even ask me.
No, I don't think. I think it's B-E.
No, it's B-E-I. B-E-I-G.
I should have known to ask Paul how to spell something in French.
I didn't know there was going to be a test first thing. But they're basically these little sugar-coated pastries.
Pastries, yeah.
I don't know. The people would call them donuts, but it's calling it a donut.
They're just square donuts.
No, they're not.
They're more than that. Yeah. The ones at the hotel are really good.
No, yeah, but when you go to
they're not a Café du Monde.
No,
yeah,
Café du Monde is where people go to get one.
Because that's where it all started, right?
I don't know where it all started.
I think that's where the beignets came from.
Yeah. And the coffee there is pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to the Metis Tech Show. I am Paul Chaves. With me is
Juan Cardona. I'm the technical instructor at our Ohio Training Center.
And Juan, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to talk about static pressure.
Static pressure. And joining us today, our special guest, Chris Morin. Chris, welcome again.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
All right. Real quick, for those who don't remember the last time you were on, tell us what you do.
Oh, yeah. So I'm actually the regional sales manager in Eastern Mass and Rhode Island on the residential side for Mitsubishi. And I also operate HVAC ProBlog in my spare time.
Okay.
I love it, too.
Nice. Okay.
Thanks.
And Scott, tell us who you are.
My name is Scott Tallman. I am the technical instructor out of Suwannee.
That's right. Thanks.
And where's Suwannee located?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, okay. Georgia. Well, Suwannee is north of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're actually in New Orleans this week, hence the beignets, and we're at our national sales conference. We also have a bunch of nurses here for a different conference. And Juan, stop grabbing your chest every time they walk by. It's getting embarrassing. So, anyway.
Okay, Paul.
We're going to talk about static pressure. So everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people think of us as a ductless company. Because can we say we're a ductless company?
No, not anymore.
No, not at all.
Not anymore. We have ductwork. So what is the important thing about ductwork that we have to keep in mind?
Static pressure.
Static pressure.
Correct.
Because if the static pressure is off, then our airflow is off and we don't get enough CFMs, which is, everybody knows what that is, cubic feet per minute, then we don't get enough cooling.
No. Yeah, but with static pressure, it actually paints you a story about the entire system. I mean, I start and finish. My background, I have test and balance 15 years. So when I did a job, I relied on static pressure. So, yep.
That's right.
Yeah, all right. And we have a couple of units in our residential lineup that we attach ductwork to.
Correct.
What are they?
We have several of them. So we have a multi-position air handler.
Yeah.
We have some concealed ducted units. And we now have just presented our PAA IntelliHeat A-coil system.
So the multi-position air handler, the SVZ.
SVZ, yep.
And then we got the concealed units, the SEZ and the PEAD.
PAD, yeah, correct.
And then the PAA, the IntelliHeat coil.
Yep.
And that's designed to go on top of any gas furnace.
Any gas furnace.
Correct.
And this is nothing new. We've been putting A-coils on gas furnaces for decades.
Yes, I've been adding heat pumps to gas furnaces since back in the early 90s.
Right. Dual fuel system.
Yep.
So I'm a contractor, and I've got this coil I want to put on a gas furnace. What do I need to know?
There's a long list, Paul.
Where do we start, right?
Okay. Let's keep it to
start with the basics.
With ductwork. Let's just stick to the ductwork.
I think fan law number two, you got to start with understanding when I add a restriction to the ductwork.
Correct.
What's the new volume of air going to be, or what's the new static pressure going to be if I have an ECM motor that can handle it, right? So you can't just throw an A-coil on top of a furnace that was at ductwork designed for that furnace alone and expect that you're going to get the volume of air, or you're not going to crack a heat exchanger.
Man, you're giving me a trip to memory lane talking about fan law too. That's what I saw. I'm like, man, fan law too. I've not seen that in a minute. So
and to add to that, Chris, we also know that for gas heating, we're dealing with lower air speeds or lower CFMs for heating-only appliances than we do now with air conditioning.
Yeah, well, in the design process, it really depends on what part of the country you're in that
right.
instance, right?
Okay.
Sometimes high-efficiency gas furnaces, because of the heat loss in the Northeast, might be a higher volume of air than the cooling load.
Good point.
You know? So depending on where you're working, you know, there's no rule of thumb for this. You're going to have to know the fan line. You're going to have to take measurements before you sell and install a system that you're just adding on to.
Okay, so obviously we're audio only, but let's talk about the measurements.
Yeah. Right?
How am I going to do that?
All right, so for our A-coil on a furnace, the best two locations where you're going to take is right below the – let's talk about the return, right? So we'll take a static measurement right in the return. Now, if there's a filter, you have to be in between the filter and the furnace. That's the best place to take it. Then the next part is probably the most confusing of all for contractors, because what they'll do is they'll actually just drill a hole right after the A-coil, and that's actually a misreading. What they need to do, a true static pressure reading for an A-coil, it needs to go right into pretty much right in the middle, right below where the air goes right before the heat exchanger.
Between the A-coil and the furnace.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that's how you get your total external static.
Yeah, I actually I used to pull the limit switch.
That's a good way to put it.
Just be careful. A lot of guys, if they're using a static pressure probe, you have to make sure that that point is pointing into the stream.
Yeah, exactly.
So that we don't measure velocity pressure instead of static pressure.
And that happens quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a lot higher. It bounces around on you.
It does.
So I'm old. I used to use a YouTube and a Magna Helix. So we got better.
Oh, wow. Okay, I know what those are.
You keep filling it with water.
There's nothing wrong with the Magna Helix.
Use the sling psychrometer, spin it around. So what are we using today?
Yeah, dual input manometers that have a good resolution that can measure pascals. It's the metric version of inches of water column.
Yeah.
If that manometer, I personally have used every brand, but if that manometer can read out pascals, the resolution's low enough to get to the hundredth of an inch. That's really where you want to be when you're measuring residential ductwork.
And Scott, you scared me when you say drilling holes. Anytime we're drilling holes into ductwork, I'm always worried that somebody's going to hit the coil.
So my best suggestion is get a step bit, right? So that way you can only go in so much.
Yeah.
Or what I used to do out in the field, tell my guys back when I did was out in the field, was if they do use a drill bit, use a get a PVC pipe and then put it on top of their drill bit, and they can only drill so much into the ductwork. It's like a block off for it.
Right. Yeah, that and don't drill in anything painted. There's usually something important on the other side of something painted.
Yeah.
And before we go on, you know, we need to know, we can't take anything for granted anymore. How is static pressure measured, or what is it measured in?
Yeah, so it's measured in inches of water column, right? So that, not to be a long throwback here, what Paul was saying, they actually used to measure it with the pressure of the air would move the water in a U-tube manometer a certain number of inches, and it'd be inches of water column, right? Yeah. Now it just reads out on a digital manometer.
Right.
It's more
and
accurate
that's,
and quicker.
I'm glad you said the YouTube manometer, because that's what I started measuring static pressure with, because I use it for both gas pressure and static pressure.
Yeah.
And the YouTube manometer has nothing to do with the social media site YouTube. Just to be clear.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to be sued out there. So.
Okay. All right. So what else? So we're talking about static pressure. So duct sizing plays into that.
Yeah, that's one part of friction loss, right? So you need to have you need to start with what your system is rated for, your external static pressure that you can handle, that you're going to design around, right? But you also need to deduct all the component losses to find out what's available. And that's just the top side of the friction loss equation, right? So that's another misconception out there. A lot of people misuse duct calculators. They think it's static pressure, or they have rules of thumb that they use. They don't do the calculation.
Yep.
Friction losses on your duct calculator, it's at 100 feet. So if you have an equivalent length of more than 100 feet or less than 100 feet, you need to adjust for that. It's clearly right on the duct calculator, but no one actually.
If you would explain a little bit about that, what is total equivalent length?
Yeah, so that's actually the bottom side of the duct calculator, right? Yeah. So when you're calculating this in a residential application, you take your furthest return, right?
Yep.
In equivalent length values. So the way equivalent length is identified in Manual D, there's a standard that there's a 0.1 pressure loss, inches of water column, for 100 feet of straight duct if it's sized right, right? So if it's really hard for the air to make a turn in a piece of duct, you have more pressure loss. Therefore, that equivalent length value of that fitting is a higher number, right? So a good example is you might have a 10-foot fitting for just a 90 elbow. It's a 4 or 5-piece elbow. It's a really small, nice, easy sweep turn, right? But you could also have a 120-foot fitting if you have a bullhead tee coming off the top of a furnace, right? That's a 0.12 pressure loss.
Right. Oh, yeah. You're losing air right there.
Yeah, yeah. You're lucky to get it to the next takeoff, right?
Is this information published anywhere?
Yeah, so manual D, ACA manual D is the process. Of course, that's the third piece of system design. This assumes you've already done a load calc and you selected the equipment using manuals J and S. Then you design the ductwork, right? So you have to know the system you're putting in order to then, find out how much air needs to go to each room, how that is sized using the equipment that you're installing, knowing pressure loss and equivalent length value.
Yeah, and you know it's funny we're talking about this topic. Because, I mean, this is very dear to me. We're all in the HVAC industry. We're all about the units, about the copper, the refrigerant, the wiring. But what we do most, we speak about it the least.
Correct.
Seems that way.
What do? We cool and heat air. We move air, but we don't talk about it.
You know what's interesting, Juan, is we have worked with a lot of plumbing and heating companies too, mm-hmm. right? And those guys would never put a boiler in without measuring the radiation first and understanding the distribution of the heat, right? Why on earth would we do that with a furnace or an A-coil or
But it doesn't happen.
I know.
It doesn't happen.
They don't, right. they don't take into account what's there.
Right? I know.
And then, you know, when there's a problem, they assume it's something with the box, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and the bad part is when that's not done and something is installed improperly or incorrectly, it never gets fixed. It's you're not just putting Band-Aids on bullet wounds from that point on.
I had service guys.
Another piece of it, they just have no idea where to look. They don't realize that it is a duct issue.
Yeah.
That's the other half the problem.
Well, if you think about what it just compounds, right? So the service tech goes out there, they're not getting enough airflow, so they turn the airflow up.
Yeah, what's the first step? It's turning up the airflow, exactly.
So they turn the airflow, and then they realize, oh, now I'm not cooling the air. So they add more refrigerant, and then the amperage starts going through.
It's just a rabbit hole that keeps going in, yep.
Yeah. So how do you effectively calculate friction loss accurately?
Yep. So what you would do is take your available static. Okay. So that's, you started with what your system was rated for. Usually it's 1/2 inch of static or 0.7 or 0.8 on an SVC, right? That's the maximum. Ideally, we don't design around maximum. Usually medium, medium high. We need the service guys to be able to turn the fan speed up. That makes sense, right? All right. So you start with that, and then you deduct all of the components that the air has to pass through. So a great example would be we have a furnace. Maybe it's rated for 0.5 inches of water column on medium speed, right? We have to deduct for the air that goes the pressure loss of the air filter. Right.
Yep.
If we're not using the rock catcher that comes with the furnace, right? Mm-hmm. So that's usually like a 0.1, 0.15 pressure loss for a normal MERV 7 filter, right?
Yep.
We have a pressure loss for the A coil that now the IntelliHeat we're going to add to that furnace.
Yes.
That could be a 0.2 pressure loss, right? Then you have a balancing damper, a supply register, a return grill. That's actually a standard out of manual D. It's 0.03 a piece for one of each of those. So 0.09. So you add up all those component losses, you minus it from what you start with, and then you end up with what's available. So in that example, I'll just round up. I'm not going to do the math here. Unless it's commissions, I have a tough time doing it without calculators. But let's say it's 0.2 that's available.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be a positive number.
Yeah, right.
That's one.
Yeah, if it's not positive, there's no amount of ductwork you can touch the system. Yeah,
remove all the ductwork.
Yeah, positive 0.2. There we go. All right, and then you're going to multiply that by the constant of 100. That's the top side of the equation. And then you divide that result by the total equivalent length of the longest run. And that gives you friction loss. And friction loss should be somewhere between 0.06 and 0.16.
Now, are we saying longest run? Is the longest run on the return or on the supply?
The longest return plus the longest supply.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. I see.
And in equivalent length. So sometimes it's the one that's furthest away, but maybe the one that's furthest away has a really nice side takeoff off the trunk, couple sweep 90s. It's really easy. Maybe the one that's 2 or 3 before that goes off the top of a trunk and up an outside wall to the second floor. Obviously, that's not the furthest away from the air handler, but in equivalent length value,
it is the longest. Yep.
Okay, awesome. That's great. Right.
So, Chris, now, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No,
am I doing this? So, I'm the guy selling this. I want to sell this customer in a dual fuel, an IntelliHeat coil.
Yep.
Right? Am I doing all this before I even do that? I mean, is this done at that point, or is this done after I put the coil in?
So you, what you want to know is that the coil is going to work
right
with the air handler or the furnace that's there, right? The blower that's there. So you need to know what that blower is rated for, and you need to know what when I add this additional pressure loss, what's the friction rate going to be, and if that ductwork can handle it, right? So you, what you don't want, Paul, is like you're saying, you sell a system, it's installed, and then you find out the problem.
Right.
All right.
Which ideally, is too late then.
Yeah. Then you're losing money. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think understanding fan law number two, like we talked about at the beginning there, that when you increase volume of air 10%, it increases the static pressure 21%.
Plus the power factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is very rarely considered.
Right.
I mean, you put a system into poor shoddy ductwork, you're doubling, tripling, sometimes even beyond that, the power consumption of that motor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something as simple as adding an A coil, you think you're doing something great, and you just killed the heat exchanger, ran the electric bill through the roof.
Yep.
I mean, there's or just killed the blower motor or the control.
Absolutely.
Board, right? So, yeah, ideally you would know ahead, but I understand there's a lot of sales guys out there that don't measure static pressure for sure.
Right.
Ideally, this is a lead that's turned over from your service department. Maybe they can measure it if it's a good lead for an IntelliHeat. Or they're keeping track of that. I mean, my service team, when I was a service manager, we used to measure static pressure and temperature rise on every single furnace.
It's a great practice. When I was in tech support, I would ask contractors that would tell me I've got performance issues. I would ask them, well, what's your airflow? I said, oh, you know, the response was, I can feel it about 2 feet off the floor.
Yeah.
So that tells me a lot.
Yeah. That's velocity. Yeah. That's not airflow.
Like, exactly. You're licking your finger and you're like, yeah, I feel it. Yeah, you're good.
Airflow's good.
Airflow's good. That's how I know if I'm aiming in the right direction when I'm playing around a golf. You know, it's not the same.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about, because we've got all three types of systems. We've got a low, a medium, and a high static system. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the SVZ and the PEAD, you can design using just normal rules of duct design and manual D. All of that process applies. You can do an entire floor with the static available in those two systems. Unfortunately, with the SEZ, those ship at about a 0.14 inches of water really column. Low. The max is 0.2.
Yeah.
So normal duct design and how you're designing that system does not apply. You have to do some special things with the SEZ. So as an example, with available static, you have to have at least 0.06 available when you do your deduction starting with 0.2 in order to have enough pressure to make the friction loss calculation work, right? If you have less than 0.06 available, the math's not going to work for you. And also, you should have less than 100 feet of equivalent length for the longest run.
There you
go. Yeah. Right?
There you go.
In order to then get that number up, right, in the friction loss equation. So if you don't meet those two minimums, SEZ is not going to be the
I explain that in my when I do my classes.
Yeah.
Understanding about that ductwork, sizing your ductwork for the SEZ is very important.
It is. And how you lay it out, right? So we do some things with the SEZ we would never do with a full static air handler. Like most guys will put a box on the front of an SEZ and take those takeoffs right off the front of the box.
Right.
To keep the static pressure loss really low and the equivalent length low. So the air straight. There's no big pressure losses of trying to make a turn coming off the box on the top of a box or something.
Right.
So, yeah.
Is there a place where contractors can go to find these numbers that you're speaking of?
I have my link drive, everybody's favorite, right?
There
yeah.
You go.
Yeah. So you go to the submittal. You should be designing around medium or medium high speed. Unless you're working the SEZ, I would assume if you're going to connect any ductwork to the SEZ, you're going to work on 0.2 on high speed.
Yeah. So there's no magic. There's no secret.
There's no rule of thumb. Exactly. You're going to have to learn the math. It's easy once you do it a few times, just like any tool or software, right? And I mean, personally, maybe I'm a little more old school like Paul. I like to use the worksheets rather than the stuff built into right stock, because there's so many things in the design software that are, you know, preset that if you don't change, really messes your numbers.
They're not realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the problem you have with them. So we've talked about static pressure. We've talked about friction loss. We've talked about airflow. Now talk to us about diagnostics.
Yeah. Yeah. So once it's installed, right, Scott?
That's where you come in, Scott.
Once it's installed, it's a little harder to fix when you talk about ductwork, right? So, and of course, the first indication would be when you go to balance it, right? I think that's your background.
Correct, yep.
Yeah, so that usually points out a lot of the problems on the diagnostic side. So when you're going out there and you think there's an airflow problem, or you think there's a pressure problem, or the air coming out of your registers are noisy or something like that, you got to start by measuring static pressure like we talked right at the top, right? So if you can measure total external static pressure, it should match what you designed around, right?
Correct. And then also you can tell, once you get your external, a lot of manufacturers, you can put it on their chart to see what their CFM per ton is.
Yes.
And
yeah. So, you know, some of our systems, you know, most unitary products out there will be 350, 400 CFM per ton in the Northeast. Maybe a little higher if you're working in a climate like Arizona where you don't have to worry about a wet coil, right?
Wet coil, yeah.
Ours, we're as low as 320 CFM per ton. So, particularly with the PEAD.
I do see that with the 320. Seen it before.
The PAA, and that's the A coil, the IntelliHeat, the range we're looking for is between 350 and 400.
Right.
But there's one application that we have to be careful with, and that is the downflow application on the A coil, which there's a note in the installation instructions. We don't talk much about velocity.
Yeah.
Okay. The design for that coil on a downflow application is 350 feet per minute or FPM.
That's low.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you know, why do we do that one?
That's because of water blow off.
Water blow off. Exactly.
I've done that more than once. You know what's interesting is that because the velocity is so high when you don't connect ductwork.
Right.
Right. When the static pressure is that low, the air is moving really fast. I've done that in IT rooms, things. I've just got to get the thing running. And I come back the next day and it was blowing water all night. So, the lower the static pressure, the easier it is for that velocity to be much higher.
What about, did we talk about the air handler for a little bit?
Go ahead.
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
So for our air handler, we have to set different speeds, right? Just like our other applications we have. But I've noticed that when we, Chris, for our air handler, what do you take our statics on that one?
Yeah, so you're going to have to take it in the supply duct, and then, of course, and it would be before any turn, right?
Right.
Usually within a foot of the outlet of the air handler. And then if you don't change the filter that ships with it, then you can just take it in the return close to the unit. But if you're going to actually change that filter, a lot of people put like a filter box on by many manufacturers, 4 or 5 inch pleated filters, you're going to have to measure closer to the blower, right?
Okay.
So, if you don't measure in the right spots, you certainly could.
Correct. And that's why I wanted to bring up with air handler because, you know, we move a lot of that product. So I wanted to make sure
that's the SVZ.
SVZ.
Multi-position air handler.
Correct. Right.
So what's interesting when you design around heat pumps, when it's an air handler, a lot of people design around higher static pressures because they think like they used to do furnaces and A coils, and they have all these pressure losses. But the coil that shipped in the box with the blower is part of the pressure loss of that air handler.
That's right.
So you don't measure prior to the coil, even though it's a positive pressure coil, right? It's on the positive side of the blower. It's since that pressure loss is part of that box, you actually gain that in the design process, right? So you should not be designing with an SVZ around 0.7, 0.8 because the airflow is going to be so fast.
Yes.
And you have ductwork that's so small, it's going to be noisy. And the only time it's going to run correct is when it's at lowest speed.
Lowest speed,
right? So ideally, we're always at lowest speed, but you guys know how that goes out there.
Yeah.
So and Chris, you mentioned this, and it's something that we take for granted is the filter. You know, homeowners will go to Lowe's or Home Depot, and they'll read the paper said 95% efficient, hypoallergenic.
Yeah, they left furnace killer off of that.
Yeah, right? In a 1-inch filter. So let's talk about that because air handlers are rated with the factory filter, which I call chicken filters.
Yeah, I call bug catchers.
Exactly.
Yeah,
heard that in a while. Wow.
So I mean, because then we go to a pleated 1-inch filter with a MERV 10 or a MERV 11.
11.
Yeah. What do we do?
Yeah. So you have to know. The manufacturers, when they ship that filter is to protect the system.
Yep.
It's not to clean the air, right? So as soon as you change that air filter out to something for indoor air quality purposes, you're going to add restriction to the system.
Oh, definitely restriction.
Right? So typically, if you are going to use a 1-inch pleated filter, you probably shouldn't go above MERV 7 because the pressure loss of a MERV 7 filter that's sized right is about 0.15, 0.17, which most furnaces and air handlers can handle. If you were to go above that, like these ones that you can get at Home Depot and things like that, they have some of them don't even have a MERV rating. It's just some crazy particulate number. They don't have pressure loss listed on there. There's
of
no charts.
Not.
All right, you might lose 0.2, 0.3. I've seen some really high numbers, and that's when it's clean. When it gets dirty, it gets even higher pressure loss,
which is minutes later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you know,
it cleans the ductwork like that. Right?
Yes.
But you know, we can get a pressure drop off the filter.
Yeah.
Right. Just to see how much it is killing
absolutely.
The system.
And so. It will be surprising how high that static pressure drop
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? If you've ever been in service, you've always heard those ECM motors. They ramp up those filters are dirty.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you open up that, say, return grill or something to take that filter out. It's almost like it's like the thing just gasps for air.
Thank
God. Thank God. Right. Yeah. So and that's the fan ramping down with much lower static. You're hearing that. You're hearing the velocity of the air when you're doing that. The fan's going to keep trying to maintain the same volume.
Volume, exactly.
And the pressure just keeps, as you increase CFM 10%, the pressure loss goes up 21%, right? So, it's a vicious cycle. Then you'll replace it and it'll be dirty again next week.
Right. Oh, and then we've got those customers, you know, we've all been there when you ask them, when's the last time you changed the filter, and their eyes glass over.
Yeah. Like, what?
Filter?
Last month.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. They say last month, I say what year.
Yes, exactly.
I changed it 3 years ago. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, so quick story. I did a test and bounce job in New York sometime, and the last time that I went up and I had to climb, it was a water source heat pump. I climbed up to the ceiling and it was at a restaurant. I pulled the filter out, and the filter was dated 1991.
Wow.
I'm surprised it was in one piece.
Yeah.
It came out in pieces, but it was caked, obviously, but dated 1991.
Interesting.
It was the last time it was replaced. I think probably when it was installed. So.
Wow.
We don't need those thinking filters.
Right. Well, guys, thank you. This is probably what I consider, airflow is what I consider to be the most important thing about the heating and cooling system. And I equate airflow to blood flow. Yeah. Airflow is to the system as to what blood flow is to our heart.
Yeah.
We restrict that blood flow or airflow, we work harder, we're eventually going to give out.
Yeah, that's why we need those nurses, right?
Absolutely.
I like how you put that in there, Chris. I like that. That's nice.
They're all walking by.
I'm sure you heard a little noise.
One's grabbing his chest. It's embarrassing. You know?
All right, guys. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time. Great topic.
Yeah.
Moving forward, we'll probably have one with a little bit deeper about fan law number two.
Yeah.
And, I'd love to do that with
we'll
you
again. We'll get some information on that. And then everyone, just be looking forward to a deeper episode of Meta's podcast on airflow.
All right.
So, thanks, Chris, Scott, thank you very much for everything.
Yep.
We'll see you next time.
Are you guys ready to go get some coffee and beignets?
Yeah. Did you have the beignet here last night?
I did.
It was like apple pie.
Yeah. Yeah.
They threw apples and ice cream.
Ice cream. Oh my goodness.
I mean, whipped cream is all you need. It's dessert.
Yeah.